The Tom Woods Show, episode 908.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Hey, all you shavers out there, Harry's wants to send you a free trial set. Razor handle, 5-blade cartridge, and shaving gel. Best shave you ever had, just pay for shipping. Check it out at harrys.com/woods. Hey everybody, Tom Woods here. I'm finally getting around to talking about the Pope Francis comments about libertarianism. I realize it's a little bit late, but better late than never. It's, I think, probably going to be a short-ish episode. I've had a couple of really long ones the past couple of days, so this is a short one for you. I want to start off very quickly telling you that it looks very, very likely, like basically 100% likely, that this year, 2017, September 7th, I'm going to do a live event in Orlando for the 1,000th episode of the show. Michael Malis is a confirmed guest. I put out feelers to another possible guest who'll join me there. I want to get at least one or two more after that. And who knows what exactly what the format will be, but it'll be awesome and great and exciting. So it's going to be in the Orlando area, which is not far from where I live. It's going to be Saturday, September 9th, toward the evening. I'm going to have a special dinner beforehand just for the supporting listeners of the show, supportinglisteners.com, and I'm covering the whole thing. So you're going to get in for free, and you're going to like it. So mark that on your calendar, Saturday, September 9th. Get over to Orlando. I'll have the venue details very shortly. We're working out the arrangements right now. And it's going to be, if the Contra Cruise weren't already the event of the year, this would be the event of the year, the 1,000th episode. You know you want to be there. Plus Orlando, you can do all kinds of things. You can make a weekend out of it, right? There's no shortage of things to do in Orlando. And plenty of escape rooms, I might add, in Orlando. Some good ones. I can give you some advice if you like. So just stay tuned for that. I will, of course, mention it on the show. I'll mention it in my newsletter, which I'm sure you are receiving. You can hop on my list and get yourself a free ebook at the same time by going to tomsfreebooks.com. So I just thought I would let you know a little save the date announcement. All right, so Pope Francis. I've spoken about Pope Francis in the past and written a bit about him. And you can find on today's show notes page, tomwoods.com/908, you can find previous episodes where I've talked about Pope Francis. So I really don't want to repeat all that because I think I said it all about as well as I could ever say it on those episodes where I talked in particular about economics. So if that interests you, you're going to really enjoy those episodes. And of course, I also have a book called The Church and the Market, A Catholic Defense of the Free Economy, which came out in 2005, came out in a 10th anniversary edition a couple of years ago with an extra chapter, brand new chapter, and I think a new introduction as well. I don't even remember. It's been 2 years. I don't even remember. So The Church and the Market is worth checking out. You can get that at Amazon, or you can get it at tomwoods.com/books if you want a signed copy. But I'm particularly proud of that book, and it won a huge, huge book prize roughly a decade ago. So that means it has to be good. All right, let me read to you this passage from a recent address by Pope Francis. This is a passage on libertarianism. It runs as follows. Finally, and by the way, there's a lot of this I think is just gobbledygook. I'm just going to be honest with you. I think I can barely understand what is being said here, and I do know a little something about libertarianism, so let me read this to you. In fact, you know what? Before I read this to you, now that I think about it, before I read this to you, let me read to you something that a friend of mine wrote to me to caution me, don't go into full Woods smackdown mode just yet with Pope Francis. My friend writes this, and I sent this out in my newsletter maybe a week or two ago. He said, I speak German, Spanish, Russian, and understand and read Italian, Dutch, French, Polish, and Ukrainian. I also have 7 years of Latin. When Spanish speakers and Europeans say libertarian, they typically mean libertine or anarchist, and rarely mean what you or I would refer to as libertarian. The FDP party in Germany is often referred to as libertarian in the European media, but they are a far cry from what an American small L libertarian would define as a libertarian. So I accept that point to a degree, but I think there's enough in here to make me think that can't be the full explanation. Because let's say Pope Francis were definitely 100% without a doubt, absolutely ascertainably speaking about us, then how would his remarks be any different? I think he would probably say the same thing about us. He doesn't strike me as somebody who makes very careful distinctions among people he disagrees with. Whereas he's quite happy to say, this Marxist is my close friend. I don't know of him ever saying, and by the way, here are my free market friends. I've never heard that. So there's this tendency to lump people together, I find, to speak very loosely, to speak, frankly, irresponsibly about things he is not informed about. And also, if you were to describe libertarianism to him, I think he would sound to him like selfishness. I think that's all he would hear. So I don't see that his remarks would really be all that different. In other words, even if it is the case that he's not speaking directly to libertarianism as we understand it, if he were, I think he'd say exactly the same things he's saying here, with maybe minor changes. So I'm going to read to you the three paragraphs that caused the uproar among libertarians, and then we'll talk about them a bit. Then I'll tell you that you should be using Harry's razors. Then I'll talk a little bit more, and then we'll go and enjoy the weekend. So here we go. He writes, "Finally, I cannot but speak of the serious risks associated with the invasion at high levels of culture and education in both universities and in schools of positions of libertarian individualism. A common feature of this fallacious paradigm is that it minimizes the common good, that is, living well, a good life in the community framework, and exalts the selfish ideal that deceptively proposes a beautiful life. If individualism affirms that it is only the individual who gives value to things and interpersonal relationships, and so it is only the individual who decides what is good and what is bad, then libertarianism, today in fashion, preaches that to establish freedom and individual responsibility, it is necessary to resort to the idea of self-causation. Thus, libertarian individualism denies the validity of the common good, because on the one hand, it supposes that the very idea of common implies the constriction of at least some individuals, and the other that the notion of good deprives freedom of its essence. The radicalization of individualism in libertarian and therefore antisocial terms leads to the conclusion that everyone has the right to expand as far as his power allows, even at the expense of the exclusion and marginalization of the most vulnerable majority. Bonds would have to be cut inasmuch as they would limit freedom. By mistakenly matching the concept of bond to that of constraint, one ends up confusing what may condition freedom, the constraints, with the essence of created freedom, that is, bonds or relations, family and interpersonal, with the excluded and marginalized, with the common good, and finally, with God." Now, as I say, maybe Pope Francis is speaking about something other than libertarianism as you and I know it. But you know something you and I do know for sure is that plenty of people speak of libertarianism as we understand it in exactly these terms. So somebody certainly is making these arguments, whether or not Pope Francis is. Somebody is somewhere. So it couldn't hurt to say at least a little something about it. So first of all, the invasion of libertarian individualism at high levels of culture and education, I don't know what word to use to describe that idea, other than delusional. There is no invasion of libertarianism. I only wish libertarianism were 3% as influential as is implied here. There's no such thing. To the contrary, everybody at the highest levels of these things speaks constantly about subordinating the private interest to the public interest. Everyone speaks that way. That is what you are taught in school nonstop, that you must subordinate yourself to the will of the majority. That's what everybody graduates believing. Everybody graduates believing that the private sector is where selfish and terrible people carry out their exploitation of the public. Everybody believes that. There's almost no countervailing cultural force against that. I mean, we've tried our best to hit back against it, but we are going up against a major, major onslaught. So that's certainly not true. And this isn't even debatable. It is not true that there has been an invasion of positions of libertarian individualism. That is absolutely false. There's no way to defend that statement. Then it says that we read that this fallacious paradigm minimizes the common good. Now, I don't see that that's the case. What does it mean to be a libertarian? It simply means that you have a very high threshold for what you will allow violence to be used for. That's all it means. It doesn't mean that you think selfishness is good. It doesn't mean that you think money is the most important thing in the world. It doesn't mean that you think that the highest value in life is to earn a lot of money and then spend it on frivolous items. It means nothing, has absolutely nothing to do with any of that. You could believe those things and be a libertarian, but it has nothing to do with it. What it has to do with is the use of violence in society, and we think that violence is not a good way to resolve disputes between people, that instead we ought to use reason and we ought to have boundaries around each individual, property rights and the right to life around each individual, to give each individual some kind of shelter against the bad intentions possibly of other people or of groups of other people claiming to speak for the common good. And there's really the problem with this term, common good. It's not that you can't conceive of what the common good might be or in a particular situation. It's that there is a refusal to acknowledge that there could be people of goodwill who have genuine differences over what constitutes the common good. And when that happens, how are you going to resolve that situation? I think the common good calls for A, and you think the common good calls for B. If our view is that, well, there must be one vision of the common good, and it must be enforced, and people must be forced to conform to it, then what this flowery language of common good really amounts to in the real world is I'm going to, through violence, impose my version of the common good on you. And not act as if you have a legitimate point of view. You are a dissenter from the common good. The common good must triumph. So therefore, all the worse for you. Why is it that we would think that religious values require us to act in that way? It would seem to me that that's a wicked way to behave. That instead of reasoning things through, we say, well, my vision of the common good trumps yours. So therefore, I'm taking out the clubs and the sticks and the guns and the hangmen to make sure that my version of the common good triumphs. What is the common good if not peace and prosperity? What else would it be? And that's what we're shooting for with libertarianism. And moreover, even if you think of the classic paradigm case of, let's say, a polluter. Let's say you've got a business firm and it's dumping waste into a lake. And the Pope might say, well, that runs contrary to the common good. Well, why, instead of using this common good language that, you know, in some cases maybe you could make a case for, but in other cases it's so vague and imprecise and it changes in all circumstances. Well, in this circumstance, the common good calls for this, and that one, the common good calls for that, and then we argue about it forever. Why don't we just stop doing that and just say, well, how is this undesirable thing being carried out? How are they getting away with polluting the lake? How are they getting away with that? Answer, they're getting away with it because there's no property right in the lake. And therefore, there's nobody to enforce the rights to property in that lake and to be able to say legally, stop doing this. So that's a failure of the state, which is supposed to be the great engine of bringing about the common good. But the state fails repeatedly, precisely in cases like this, where it does not appropriately assign property rights or even allow the assigning of property rights. And it's property rights that prevent this sort of aggression, that prevent this sort of pollution. Because the owner of the lake or the group of people who collectively own the lake or the whatever it is, the local conservation society or whatever it is, or people could crowdsource to whatever solution people want to come up with, then you could say, in the same way that you can't come dump your garbage on my front lawn, you can't dump your sewage into my lake or into this lake that all of us own, let's say. And that would be the solution. So there's no need to appeal. Occam's razor, let's try and go for the simplest possible explanation. Well, I think it applies to situations like this. Let's go for the simplest possible arrangement. And the simplest possible arrangement that handles problems like this is simply to assign property rights to things. And that way, we protect those things from invasion. And if the concern is that we have selfish, antisocial individuals, well, property rights constrain those individuals. A selfish, antisocial individual who wants to dump waste into the lake is now stopped from doing that. And therefore, we're able to keep an eye on those people thanks to property. So it's exactly wrong to think that property means that wicked people can have free reign. No, it's property rights create property rights create boundaries around things and people that prevent bad people from having free reign. It's precisely property that prevents bad people from having free reign over everybody and exploiting everybody, whereas the state has no such boundaries. The state operates outside normal property rules, and it can intervene wherever it likes and in all kinds of situations, and that's precisely where you get antisocial behavior. I mean, what could be more antisocial than a bunch of people who have the right to initiate aggression and who are only temporary caretakers of the societies they rule over, so they have no interest in preserving the capital value of the society because they won't be around to enjoy the fruits of that capital value. Their incentive structure is to exhaust the resources of society immediately for their own political benefit. Why should I conserve for the future when I can use things now? And by the way, that would apply to the national debt. Because I can make the country totally indebted by just using up a lot of resources right now, and then I won't have to deal with the consequences of the debt because I won't be around for it. That's antisocial. That's working against the common good. That's working against voluntary solutions that people might come up with. And so running through these sorts of critiques of libertarianism is a really insulting view of ordinary people. And I think I read this in a comment section somewhere, so I can't remember how to give credit because I don't remember where, what comment, but somebody made the point that when you talk this way, you're really saying people are too stupid to come up with their own voluntary solutions. They're too stupid and selfish and wicked to do it. And so we need they're ignorant. They're ignorant. I mean, unless we have PhDs from Harvard coming around telling them how to act, they're going to do the wrong thing. And that definitely comes through. I mean, I don't think they would want to be called on it, but that definitely comes through in these critiques. There's no way people could come up with voluntary, peaceful alternatives. And in fact, I think these critics can't even conceive of a voluntary alternative, or even that using threats of violence to bring about the so-called common good is even a problem. They're so used to doing it that way that I'm not even sure they think of it as a problem. Then let's get into this idea that it's only the individual who gives value to things and interpersonal relationships. All right, that's going to be fun to critique, but now let's hear a word from our sponsor. Hey, everybody, it's Tom Woods, and you know what? I really love Harry's razors because they give me the best, closest, most beautiful shave I've ever had. I used to use blades back when I was much younger, but then I had to stop because I wound up being a bloody mess all the time. And I have to say, it was with some trepidation that I tried Harry's razors because I thought it would just be a repeat of that. But to the contrary, they are outstanding. So much so that, as you know, when holiday time came and I wanted to give Michael Malice a gift. After all, he had been voted the best guest on the show. So I sent him the Harry's. I sent him a really, really elegant Harry's shave set, and he absolutely loves it. So Harry's is going to give you their trial set for free. Just three smackers to cover shipping, but you're going to get a weighted ergonomic razor handle, five precision-engineered blades with a lubricating strip and trimmer blade, a rich lathering shave gel, and a travel blade cover. That's a $13 value for you to try. I can't believe I said dollar instead of smacker. So 13 clams, let's say. You don't pay 13 clams. You just pay three smackers for shipping. So what are you waiting for? Head over to harrys.com/woods right now. That's harrys.com/woods. Okay, we're back from that word from our sponsor. All right, so let's talk about this part here about individualism affirms that it is only the individual who gives value to things and interpersonal relationships. I don't know anyone who believes that, libertarian or otherwise. That's just a total straw man. I know no one. I've never heard of anyone who believes that. I mean, yeah, I could probably dig up an obscure philosopher. I'm talking about real people in the real world you see on a day-to-day basis. Only the individual who gives value to things. Again, if we're going to be fair and talk about real libertarianism, we have to remember all it has to do with is the use of violence in society. We have nothing to say about who gives value to things. That's a separate area of life to deal with. Libertarianism is only dealing with the issue of violence. All other things in your life, aesthetics and all kinds of other interests you may have, these are all separate from libertarianism. So he goes on to say, it is only the individual then who decides what is good and what is bad. Again, I personally don't know people who think this, that an individual could simply say, well, murder is okay because I think that's good, and I think that not murdering is bad. I don't know anybody who thinks that way. So that's just made up. That's made up. And then you can triumphantly announce, well, you know, those people really are dangerous. Well, if they existed, they would be dangerous. I agree. Then the idea that the radicalization of individualism in libertarian and therefore antisocial terms. So if we're talking about real libertarianism and not a word that could, it seems to me the Pope has an obligation to speak precisely. I mean, if you don't know that there's a word libertarian that is in general currency in the U.S. and, you know, and English is a fairly important language around the world, and you're not going to clarify what you're talking about, that's his problem, not mine, because I legitimately can be concerned that I'm being attacked here, and I shouldn't have to go and say, well, what would he mean by libertarian? It's up to him to make distinctions like that. So anyway, libertarian and anti-social. So if you don't favor violence, the initiation of violence, and you look for peaceful solutions, then this makes you anti-social. That is the way a lot of people think. A lot of people think that way. Obviously, when you spell it out to them like that, they may backtrack and say, well, I don't actually mean that. I don't think they realize that they're implicitly saying this when they say libertarians are antisocial. What, you mean just because we're against violence to solve problems, that makes us antisocial? I don't think so. Then leads to the conclusion that everyone has the right to expand as far as his power allows. Well, I don't even know what that means. Right to expand as far as his power. Does that mean the right to accumulate wealth, maybe? I don't know, but that's a strange choice of words. I mean, I suppose we could blame the translation. I mean, presumably this was given in Spanish, but they have really good translators, so I don't really know what that means. Everyone has the right to expand as far as his power allows. And what does his power mean? Does it mean the choices people have when they have wealth, that if I have wealth, I have the power to go on vacation or the power to buy a loaf of bread or something? I'm not sure. These are very strange. It's a very strange word choice, even at the expense of the exclusion and marginalization of the most vulnerable majority. I think it's not debatable that in capitalist societies these days, the majority is not vulnerable in any sense that would have been understood by anybody at any time in the history of the world. If you want to look at a vulnerable majority, look at people living in pre-capitalist societies, where one bad harvest meant starvation for people. Look at the standard of living they enjoyed. It was beyond horrifying. I mean, we can romanticize what it was like to live in 16th century France, but I guarantee you wouldn't have wanted to live then. You wouldn't have wanted dentistry without anesthesia. You wouldn't have wanted to walk around with no shoes. You wouldn't have wanted to have no conveyances of any kind. There you had the rich who could at least be moved around in, you know, one way or another, or they could be entertained in one way or another. But the average person had no way to, you know, what's the average person going to do? Go join a book club or get other dog enthusiasts together on the weekends and of course not. None of these things that are liberating that we enjoy about our lives were available to these people. So they were the vulnerable majority. They lived in poverty that we can scarcely imagine. I mean, today, in fact, not long ago, the New York Times ran an article, probably less than a week ago, they ran an article about the bankruptcy of Puerto Rico. And the opening sentence, see, a lot of these articles, a good journalist doesn't open with, Puerto Rico today announced that it was, that's boring. You open with a human interest story that then leads into your main point. So you open with some person who's suffering in Puerto Rico, and then you tie that in. You say, this is just a side effect of the terrible financial turmoil that Puerto Rico is undergoing. So this New York Times article, the worst human interest story they could find, the worst thing they could think to describe was such and such person, I don't remember his name, is having to tighten his belt and may in his household may have to cut back to just one cell phone. I'm not kidding you. That was the worst fate they could imagine. Let's put that at the beginning of the article. This guy might wind up having to have only one cell phone. How is that household going to function? They might have to share a cell phone. So you see what I mean? If that's your problem today, then the majority is not vulnerable. Now, you may say, Woods, don't be heartless. We all know that people, a lot of them have precarious employment and it's a rough economy over the past 20 years. I absolutely get that. But if there's anybody in the world who would pick the year 1630 to live in, thinking that employment prospects would be better then, I would like to meet that person. So I don't believe the majority is vulnerable. To the contrary, the majority has seen its wealth increase by over tenfold in terms of its daily per capita income. The statistics are overwhelming, what we've seen over the past couple of hundred years with the explosion in wealth that's been created by even a hampered capitalism. So it has moved people from the margins. It's a wonderful thing we should all be celebrating. It's rather peculiar that you'd complain about the present situation when poverty has been alleviated more than at any time in history and with more people alive to boot. So, but the idea that you would have to break apart bonds with people, that you would have to not be interested in the excluded and marginalized or the common good or with God, this is just nonsense. If all we want is for violence not to be initiated by anybody, that's it. You can have whatever relationship with God you want to have. You can work together on common projects. No libertarian says we should never work together on a common project. It's at the basis of that common project should be a common agreement on the worthiness of the project and the way we ought to carry it out instead of cracking skulls open. I mean, which one of these is a more attractive way to run society? And which one do you think should we be warned about by the Pope? The skull crackers or the people who say, nope, you know what? Mankind must at this point be able to say, you know, I think we can cooperate on the basis of reason. What would be bad about that? Why would that be bad? Even if it were 3% less efficient, which I don't even think it would be, wouldn't we say, but you know, the moral principle behind it trumps that? Wouldn't we say that? Anyway, so I think that's all I have to say. But if you are interested in this, and particularly in the stuff about economics, I would urge you to check out the episodes, which I think you will really enjoy, on the show notes page, which is tomwoods.com/908. Now, before we wrap up for today, I got one more website to tell you about that you're going to like. Created by a listener, of course, and it is honeydistrict.com. And I read this. Our website is dedicated to honey. We explain its types, why it's beneficial to your health to eat honey every day, how you can use honey in cooking. We describe and taste new honeys and give tips about choosing honey. I believe this site will be an interesting source for all who want to be healthier and add some honey into their lives. Many of the posts are quite general now, but the name comes from the fact that we live in the District of Columbia, so there will be a stronger focus toward honey from that general area. But there will be plenty of useful information for people around the country. I should also mention that I've published a book, Honeys from the Old and New World, A Practical Guide, which is available on Amazon and Kindle. So how about that? Very interesting sounding. Check it out at honeydistrict.com, and I will link to that as well as the listener website mentioned at tomwoods.com/908. You know, the other day, you all know my usual spiel. You get a nice shout out like this if you use my link for your web hosting. Gives you a nice, you know, a nice big onrush of traffic when you're just getting started. Plus, I have other bonuses. You know that. And you know that you can find those bonuses at tomwoods.com/publicity. But I want to say, in particular the other day, I was in the I have two secret Facebook groups, one's for the supporting listeners and one's for people who get their web hosting through my link, because we have a bloggers group and, you know, we help each other out. And somebody the other day said, you know, I have this landing page and I'm not that happy with it. And about a half hour after she posted that, nobody had commented. Well, then I checked later in the day. There were 43 comments. Now, that is a great help. And that is a free bonus. I mean, imagine being able to turn to hundreds of people who are of like mind with you, by the way, and many of whom know more than you do about some of the technical stuff surrounding websites and blogs. And you can just go and contribute where you know something and then ask questions where you don't know something and get answers fairly quickly from a lot of people. I'm quite sure that's a service people would pay for, and you get that for free when you use my link that you'll find at tomwoods.com/publicity. So don't start that website or blog until you read tomwoods.com/publicity. You see all the goodies that I am going to give you. All right, that is it, everybody. Thanks for listening.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.